You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. Three, two, one. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today's episode is brought to you by Tethered Wasp, Vortex, Feed Hub, Code Blue, Huntworth, and Full Sneak Gear. Today's guest, John Stallone. John, how we doing, man?
I'm good. Good. Running with my hair on fire as usual.
But yep.
I'm doing well. Can't complain.
I had one of those days yesterday where you wake up and it's like a long blink. And then you open your eyes and my alarm on my phone was going off for it was time to go pick my kids up from school.
Oh, jeez.
It was... that's how fast life is going right now. It blows my mind.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't know how old you are, but you look a lot younger than me. It just gets worse as you get older.
How old are you?
I'm 49.
Okay. All right. So we're close. I'm 40, 43, but,
you don't look a day older than 42.
Oh, there you go. Flattery will get you everywhere, my friend. let's see. Today, we're going to talk about hunting ethics. We're going to talk about Howl for Wildlife. That's an organization that you started it, right?
I'm one of the co-founders.
Co-founders.
Vice president. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to get into that. And this is perfect timing because I've been thinking a lot about all of these things lately, and it just seems there's certain things where I feel like there needs to be a line drawn in the sand, and mm-hmm. and certain things need to say, okay, we're going too far in this direction, we need to back up. And I'm not thinking just in the hunting realm, I'm thinking about that in life in general, right?
Oh, sure.
And so
we see that with the AI stuff. Mm-hmm. and I mean, geez, I was just having this conversation this morning. I mean, we keep going on the path that we're going. Didn't anybody watch Terminator? The writing's on the wall. I don't think it'll happen in mine in your lifetime, and maybe not even in our kids, but our grandkids, I think definitely are going to see some
crazy,
you know,
crazy.
Might be some apocalyptic kind of crap. So
yeah, and that's one of those things where I feel like the outdoors is very important, and not just the outdoors, but knowing how to survive in the outdoors, whether that's, mm-hmm. you know, cleaning, field dressing an animal, or finding a way to make water clean and drinkable, and filtering it and cleaning it and things like that. Because I watched a YouTube video. Now, who knows if this is real or fake, about how there is technology out there that a satellite can emit an EMP mm-hmm. pulse that will fry a whole bunch of, like, basically everything electronics in a certain area, and then having to get water from your faucet, will your toilets flush? The supermarkets are all going to close, like all that stuff. So it's almost like all of these doomsday preppers, they're just all one step ahead of where we should all be.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I obviously, I'm not going to let that dictate my life.
Right.
But it's also something I'm paying attention to. I've always paid attention. You can't dismiss the fact that these things are possible.
Right.
I'm not sure about, you know, the satellite EMP thing, but I know they have EMPs. I mean, Hell, the military uses them all the time. We have small units that can, you know, affect something within a 100, 200 yard radius that they use all the time.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's the reality of where we're heading. It's scary.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Like, it's a scary thought, especially for guys like myself and you who are, you know, we're kind of rooted in this older way of life in a sense.
Yep.
You know. Yep. You know, I have a bunch of gadgets that I rely on nowadays for hunting too. But
yep.
It's that, you know, that connection with the way things were is rapidly declining.
Yes. Agreed. 100%. 100%. And then there's, like you mentioned, there's the few that don't like that, man. I was like, if you told me, hey, Dan, I'm sorry, you're going to have enough food and water to survive the rest of your life, but it's got to be done 10,000 feet in elevation in a cabin with no electricity. You can hunt, you can fish, you can collect water, right? Things like that. I feel like I would do okay at some of that stuff, and wouldn't probably complain as much as some. Now my wife would leave me in a heartbeat, but that's a different story.
same.
So, I want to kick it off with ethics, because it's a smorgasbord out there of what is right and what is wrong. You got some people out there saying cell cams are too far. You know, you got other people that don't like baiting. Long range shots, anything over X distance is unethical because the animal does not have a chance to defend itself. Like the list goes on and on. And so when it comes to hunting and hunting ethics, is it black and white?
No, it's definitely not black and white. And I think the argument or the discussion of ethics really boils down to each individual person. Like for myself, okay, so you brought up cell cams and trail cameras. Here in Arizona, we lost the use of trail cameras. First, it was cell cameras, and then it became all trail cameras. And there was an ethics argument about that here as well. Now, being a guy who's hunted all over the United States, and I've had the opportunity to hunt most of the 29 big game species here, I've seen a lot of different views. I've been with a lot of different people. I've seen a lot of different places, and I am personally not against trail cameras, and I'm not really for them either. So it's like one of these things that it's a tool, and as long as it's not being abused, like I feel like specifically with the trail camera thing, like cell camera, the line of ethics gets crossed when you are using, I just got a picture of a deer, or you just got a picture of a bear, whatever the case may be, and now I'm going to that stand, or now I'm going to that area where that animal's. Is there an ethics problem because I don't have a lot of time to go check my my trail cameras and I get a picture on my phone, I don't think that's an ethics problem. I think that's, you know, are you a lazy person or are you, you know, you're not putting in the effort. I shouldn't say lazy. Are you you're not putting in the effort that somebody else? Does it give somebody who doesn't have the time to put in that effort an advantage?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it doesn't give you an advantage over anybody else who can put that same trail camera out there. So, like, for me, again, it's not a tool that I ever really relied on. I mean, as an outfitter here in Arizona, I used it more as a tool to sell hunts.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people want to see what type of caliber of animal they're going to be. They want to get excited about hunting. And the other thing about it, too, is like as an outfitter, you get somebody, you tell them to go sit on a water hole or just go sit in a blind and you don't have any trail cameras. And they're like, well, how do you know there's anything going to come in here? And they, you know, especially here in Arizona, you could sit 3-4 days and not see a damn thing. And then all of a sudden you see something. It just gave it was like an extra added confidence thing.
Yeah.
So when we lost them, I lost that, but it didn't affect me. I really don't. It didn't matter to me. Like, I really don't care. It's not something that affects me. And I don't like I said, I don't think it's an ethics issue. I think it's an argument that happens quite often. And we see it at Howful Wildlife all the time. And so we try to avoid people problems. I call them people problems because it's always an argument where hunters can be on both sides of the fence on things.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, just I'm going to throw this out here since we're talking about it. Anytime you have an argument about something that hunters can be on both sides of the fence with, 90-something percent of the time, that argument will go to the side. It will side with anti-hunting. So keep that in mind. So next time you're arguing with your brother about, you know, whether or not they should use a trail camera or not, the anti-hunters are lobbying to get rid of trail cameras. It's going to go with them.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So anytime there is a chance, a right or a current regulation could be removed, that then mm-hmm. is sided with anti-hunting.
Sure. Okay. So let's put that into bear hunting or something like that. You talked about baiting. So baiting's a big thing. There's some people, hunters that like to bait, some hunters that don't, some people that feel like baiting is okay, especially in their neck of the woods, whatever, because it's so thick or, you know, there's no other option. You can't use dogs or you can't glass because the terrain doesn't lend to it. So you bait. Well, anti-hunting will jump on that. If there's a rift between hunters, anti-hunting will jump on that and they will push it to their side.
Gotcha.
So I always I approach things like, hey, if Joe's okay with baiting and Pat's not okay with baiting, okay, Pat, you just don't bait, dude. You know, like mm-hmm. you do you. You hunt them the way you want to. You want to track them down. You want to find, you know, tracks in the mud and, you know, sneak up on them. That's good on you. Like, the things that we argue as ethics most of the time, now there's some things that are for sure. And right off the top of my head, I can't think of one right now, but there are things. And I know something actually just recently came up that we could probably talk about. The things that we argue as ethics are more so ideals or opinions of how we do things and how we view things. Now, if we all took a step back and looked at hunting as the big picture, like, does that hurt hunting? Does it help hunting? Or does it not have an effect one way or the other? So, like, and I guess, you know, baiting, that could be misconstrued, you know, that could be sold as a bad sale of goods or whatever to the non-hunting public from anti-hunting. But if done correctly and done within regulation and done the right way, it can also be shown as, you know, a good way to manage that population. It could be a a clean method of take or whatever the case may be. I don't, again, I'm going to go back to saying, like, most of these problems that we view as ethics, like, I know the crossbow thing comes up all the time. Now, my personal opinion on a crossbow, I don't consider a crossbow to be, shouldn't be allowed during the archery season, mm-hmm. unless you are physically impaired. Yeah. Like, you're not physically, you know, you have shoulder issues, you're handicapped in some way, shape, or form, that you cannot use a crossbow. But if you want to use a crossbow in, let's say, muzzle loading season or rifle season, yeah, have at it. Like, that to me, but that's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
You know, we have to look at things that, like, on a larger scale. Are we taking people out of the woods? Are we taking people away from, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, away from the conservation table? Are we taking that voice away by limiting hunters from using a crossbow, because that's the only way they can get into archery? You know, I waver back and forth on that particular.
Yeah.
Because it is an unfair advantage.
Yeah. So I kind of get this feeling that the word ethics in hunting should be taken off, like the word ethics should just be taken away from the discussion of whether or not cell cameras are ethical. Because like in the state of Iowa right now, we can use cell cams. All right. Mm-hmm. We can use regular trail cameras, whatever. But down in Arizona, there's that, like you said, that no trail camera ban across the entire state. So Does that mean that you think what I'm doing is unethical, or that I think you're crazy for banning them? As long as it is a rule and a regulation, there shouldn't be any type of ethical dilemma. It's already put in stone by the state, mm-hmm. saying you can or you cannot do this.
Right.
Okay. And so
I think with that specifically, though, not to cut you off, but that specifically, like, I think hunters should be not arguing whether or not a trail camera is ethical or not. They should be arguing about putting laws in place that put guardrails up so that they cannot be used unethically. So, like, the use of a trail camera is not unethical, unless, like you said, I gave you that example, you know, you get a picture of something and you're, now you know that animal's there right now, you know.
Right. So
eating under that tree or drinking from that water, let's go there.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second, just because I'm good at it. Mm-hmm. Why is that unethical to get a picture and then instantly go into the woods and shoot an animal?
I think there is some gray area as to whether or not that's considered fair chase. And again, it goes to this part, like, when you can argue both sides of it, it's always going to pose a problem. That particular thing is whether that is considered unethical across the board by hunters. I can tell you right now, it's not, because I know it's not. You know, some people don't have a problem with that. Some people also don't have a problem driving around with a spotlight and shooting deer out of the back of a truck. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and most of us hunters would argue that's, you know, that's not hunting, that's poaching.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help.
For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm having these issues like pop up in my head where, you know, if you want to go down a rabbit hole, and we introduced the term fair chase. Okay. Yep. Is hunting with dogs fair chase? Is using a feeder in a high fence environment considered hunting? Is that fair chase? Is, and you could go 1,000 directions either which sure. way and say, okay, it's a low fence scenario, but it's it's 2,500 acres with a food plot in the center of it and a tower blind and a muzzleloader or a rifle or something like that. Is that fair chase? There's no clear definition of what hunting is. And so that's different for everybody. Therefore, you can't put a label on something that doesn't have like a clear definition.
Right. Well, I mean, as far as the argument of fair chase, I think Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young, their guidelines for what's considered fair chase is a pretty solid example of what, you know, if you got a question if what I'm doing is fair chase versus not, and you match it up to what their, you know, what their rubric is, then, you know, if it matches up, then you're probably doing something fair chase. But if it doesn't, that's why you can't enter an animal in a book that's been shot at a feeder or on a fence thing. Is it considered hunting? Hunting and fair chase are two different things. You know, in my opinion, I think. Are there certain things that are considered hunting? I think it's really hard to put like a blanket on everything. I think everything boils down to a specific scenario. Like, is the same thing as hunting, bow hunting, spot and stalk, a deer that's living in a 20,000 acre enclosure, is that the same as, you know, shooting a deer off a feeder in 500 acre enclosure? No, it's definitely not. Like, you know, you're in 10,000-20,000 acres, they might not even know there is a freaking fence that exists.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, as hunters, we want to be the best stewards of hunting and as we possibly can. And we always want to put our best foot forward. Mm-hmm. So I think we're probably, you and I are not going to solve the problems of ethics on this podcast.
Right.
But what we can do is have a real conversation with ourselves. And I don't mean sit there and say self, but have a real like moment to think about the things that we do and the things that we put out there, and how they would be perceived by somebody who is not a hunter.
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe start thinking about things like that. Like that might help guide you in things that are on the fence within the hunting community.
Like I want to go down a crazy rabbit hole of like, why should I care what the non-hunting public thinks about hunting, when even if I make what would be considered a great ethical shot through the lungs, and there's blood all over. Eventually, I have to take a knife. I have to open its guts up, remove the guts, the stomach, you know, all the vitals and things like that. So then I can skin the animal, remove the meat, right? And so just that alone.
Nobody wants to see that.
Nobody wants to see it, but I actually like that part of it. Right. It's the culmination of everything that we do.
Sure.
So why should I care what my neighbor who is who doesn't hunt and who I'm not going to say he's anti-hunting, but kind of turns his nose up at hunting. Like, why should I give a shit?
Well, why should you give a shit? So there's 5% of us that in the United States that hunt, and there's 5% that are anti-hunting. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's 90% in the middle.
Right.
That 90% in the middle really has the power to dictate whether you get to go hunting or not.
Right.
Okay. Now, I hear that argument all the time. Well, I don't want to placate to, you know, the softies and the snowflakes and blah, 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 blah. You hear everything.
Yep.
I don't believe in that. There's guys out there talking about, hey, don't post gripping grins. Don't show, hell. I mean, there's extreme out there. I know Matt Ranella's the hunt quality thing. Mm-hmm. He's pushing everybody to not talk about hunting at all, And I don't see that. I don't see that to be true. I think hunters have been promoting, so to speak, or at least showing that they've been doing what they do since, we were drawing cave drawings, Instagram right now is our version of cave drawing. We're going to post it. Mm-hmm. I think what it comes down to is if you're going to post a picture of a deer, well, let's try to make it look good. Let's not have blood everywhere. Let's not try to have that stuff that's common sense, but I'm going to say it just to say it for those people who aren't thinking about that. But I think you need to tell the story. Tell the whole story.
Yeah.
Because what happens is if you just post a grip and grin, you're just showing this dominating I'm the great white hunter and I killed this thing and yada yada yada. You're not telling the story. You didn't tell people, hey, I practiced with my bow for 6 months. I scouted every weekend. This is the camaraderie that went into that. These are the meals that were made out of it. This is the meat, this is my connection. These are the human intrinsic values that I have that are important to me. And as soon as you start showing all those things and you start talking about those things, the middle ground, they may not want to do it, which is fine with us, right? We don't need more competition. We're not asking for more hunters. You're probably not going to change any anti-hunter's mind, but you're not offending, and you're also sharing the reality of that hunt.
Mm-hmm.
You're sharing the reality of what hunting is, because since before you and I were kids, anti-hunting has been putting out propaganda, the whole Bambi effect, the where this toothless hillbillies running around willy-nilly shooting shit out of the back of trucks, drinking, lopping off heads, leaving, any negative thing you can think about, that's what they've been painting the picture of the hunter is. And it's on us to show that that's not what hunting is.
Yeah.
We care about the land. We care about the deer. We care about the elk. We care about the lions and bears and wolves. Yeah, do we want wolves to come in and decimate a herd? No, but we care about these species on the landscape, and we care about the habitat holistically.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the one piece of it.
Yeah.
So in order to do that, there's, you start by, what are you putting out there? I'm not putting out the right thing if it's easily misconstrued. And I was, I had a TV show for from 2004 to 2016, like the industry's taken a really crazy turn for the better in a lot of ways. But man, I had contracts back in the day where, like, oh, you know, if you didn't show X amount of kill shots, you know, you didn't fulfill your contract. You know, broadhead manufacturers wanted to see as much blood as possible. You know, and I got it from a marketing standpoint. I'm, like I said, I'm an outfitter, so people want to see, people in the hunting space want to see certain things. They want to know, am I going to be successful if I go buy this thing? Am I going to be successful if I go hunting with this guy? And in order to do that, you showed success on the most extreme level of it.
Yeah.
But the problem is, there's, like I said, there's this middle ground, and they don't want to see things the way you want to see things. And that's not to say that you don't want to see a nice, you know, a nice picture with a deer of not necessarily a grip and grin. Like I post pictures all the time with like me admiring the deer, or right, me packing the meat out or whatever. Those are things that guys in the hunting industry and girls in the industry, or I shouldn't say industry, community, enjoy as well. Like, we don't all always have to have this, you know, as he lay picture, or, you know, whatever. Well, look at my, he didn't go 20 yards and there's blood everywhere type thing. Like, we don't have to, because we're not just talking. We're not just talking to hunters.
Yeah.
We're not, if you understand the concept of echo chambers, we're not just here, because there's so many different people that can see our stuff, but we have to kind of, like, I'm not saying cater, but to think about what you're putting out there and how it would be perceived by you if it was something else. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so one of the things that, you know, as far as all this discussion that could, you know, any, we could take this conversation 100 directions, but like you talked about why should I care about some kind of ban in Colorado, like hounds, mm-hmm. hounds, for example, using hounds to hunt animals. If I live in Iowa, where we don't have bears, man.
Sure. Actually,
and so the other thing is, like, then you got a state like Alabama, I believe it's Alabama, that mm-hmm. they can run deer with dogs down there in certain mm-hmm. areas. And then I've talked to both sides of that story, and the houndsmen are excited that they get to do that.
Sure.
And the dogs don't know that, hey, you can't cross. Hey, you chase that deer until it hits this fence, and then you got to come around and turn back. Like, dogs don't do that, right? They just, mm-hmm. they keep going. And then I've talked to the other side where the guys are like, yeah, man, my deer hunts get ruined every single year by guys chasing dogs chasing deer down there.
Sure.
Right. So in these small environments where you have two people, because there's one guy out there who would love to see dogs get banned so that his experience would be better. What mm-hmm. he loves to do would be better. So how do we weigh that?
Well, okay. For that specific example, the guy that wants his experience to be better, if he takes away hound hunting, the anti-hunters would love to see the hound hunting go away.
Yeah.
They would absolutely love to see that go away. Now you're going to remove. So there's a certain portion of people in Alabama that only hunt deer with dogs. Mm-hmm. That's their thing. They love it. It's more about the dogs and training the dogs and having that experience than the actual deer hunt. But they are paying into the same system that you are.
Yep.
Okay. And these are just arbitrary numbers, okay? But you remove a portion. If you took away hound hunting, you remove a portion of hunting in general. Mm-hmm. Now, those people, let me back up a little bit. because this actually plays into a perfect example. And you brought up Colorado. We should get into that because there's actually an issue going on there. So, okay, you're a deer hunter in Iowa. Okay, mm-hmm. You only hunt deer in Iowa. That's your thing. Yep. You love whitetail hunting. And if it went away, you wouldn't do anything else. Okay. Well, just like you, there's that same guy in Alabama. Okay. And he dog hunts. And we all make up this pie or this seat, this voice at the conservation table. So we have this voice. We're the largest voice at the conservation table, by the way. Okay. And it's not because we're the largest population. We're not. It's because it's a user pay system. Okay. It's this voice that continues to allow us to keep hunting anything and everything that we're allowed to hunt now. Okay. And if you lose these guys in Alabama who only hound hunt, then you lose a portion of the voice at the conservation table. And you also lose however many licenses, tag sales, yada, 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 from that population of people, mm-hmm. which shrinks the voice further. Now, Alabama, okay, instead of having, you know, $500,000, they have $450,000. So now they're unable to do the things that they need to do for deer hunting in that state, mm-hmm. which is going to eventually minimize opportunity for you, the guy who just wanted a better experience hunting.
Yeah.
And then here's the flip side of it. You can even look at it federally. We all pay into Pittman Robertson by buying guns and ammo and bows and other various equipment that has that excise tax on it. Pittman Robertson is an excise tax that when we buy certain things, a portion of that money, 10 to 11% of that money goes to this fund. Okay. If you think of PR fund as a big pie, right? And last year it was $1.5 billion. Now you lost these guys in Alabama. So since they're no longer dog hunting, they no longer need a gun. They're no longer buying ammo. They're no longer buying bows. They're no longer buying this equipment and so on and so forth that pays into this fund. So now this fund is, you know, $1.475 versus 1.4. So now when they divvy up that pie, right, now the portion that's going to you in Iowa just got a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like we're all in this together and we don't realize that we're all in this together. You brought up Colorado. So Colorado is actually facing a ban right now for mountain lion.
Go ahead. I was going to say that ban is using dogs to hunt predators, correct?
Nope.
No. Okay. It's
mountain lion hunting and bobcat hunting and lynx, which we don't hunt. But so if it's a ballot initiative, which is the scariest type, because that means that soccer moms and gas station attendants and the guy who works at McDonald's are all going to cast a vote on something that has, you know, huge implications and really should be decided on by people who have the science to do that. Right. You don't go to the meat market and ask the butcher to do, you know, to remove your tooth when you have a toothache. You're like, you don't do that. Your mechanic doesn't perform brain surgery on you. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't be having the general public make ballot box. That's what I call a ballot box biology. We shouldn't be having that, but it's part of our thing. And I it's hard to eliminate those without having roadblocks up for other things that we do in the United States that, you know, freedoms that we have. So back to what I was saying, you have this ballot initiative there. Okay. And we talked about you being a deer hunter in Iowa. Now, you might want to go to Colorado one day to go hunt deer or to go hunt elk. More lions means less deer, less elk means less tags. Less tags means less money and less opportunity for you to go do that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of steamrolls and keeps on going. Like, you don't realize that the domino effect that it has until you're so far down the line that you're like, oh shit. Like,
yeah.
So.
Strange.
Sorry about that.
No, it's good. It's strange. It's how do you convince someone who, I don't know, going back to trail cameras, let's say you are 100% anti trail camera and I'm 100% for trail camera, or just use, you know, for and against for any hunting rule and regulation that's out there. You strongly oppose and I strongly agree that I like that. How do we communicate?
Mm-hmm.
And how do, because ultimately you're the one, if there's a law passed that suffers, that if a law passed, I would suffer. Nothing really about what happens with you changes. So why? Because I look at this as a democracy, right? Mm-hmm. We live in a democracy. If you want something to happen, you vote for that thing to happen or to be taken away, right? Fill in the blank again. And so if I am strongly for or against the use of certain weapons or technologies, mm-hmm. like, how do we communicate with each other? Or maybe we don't communicate with each other. We just say, hey, let the votes do the talking, and we can take, we'll take that away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's because quite a lot to unpack right there, but
yeah, for me, like, I'm sorry.
I go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sorry. For example, crossbows in the archery season, I think we're kind of agree on that. So I don't think, now granted, in Iowa, we don't have it right now. We don't have the use mm-hmm. of crossbows, but I want to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, why should I have the right to say, oh, you can't use a crossbow in archery season?
Right. So that goes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, it's okay, we'll use that trail camera thing that you were talking about. I'm opposed to it and you're for it. You know what? Okay, John, you're opposed to it? Then don't do it. Mm-hmm. Don't use it. You self-regulate yourself how you want to self-regulate yourself. As long as the use of trail cameras is not hunting, or it's not hurting hunting as a whole, and doesn't cross this line of ethics, whatever that line may be, and where the line is drawn in the sand, I don't know. Like, you know, again, that's a decision that it'd be very, I mean, it'd probably be better if we all came out and collectively voted on and came up with a, you know, the Bible of hunting so that we had all this spelled out, right? And then we could always refer back to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that would be an absolute shit show to do that. I think it's on you to decide what is what you want to do. And if it doesn't affect, like I said, hunting as a whole and the look of hunting to the non-hunting public, then, you know, don't make a big stink about it. Yeah. I'm gonna let you do what you want to do. Like, if you want to use trail cameras, you use trail cameras.
Yeah.
And like, I almost have that, like, as that same mindset with the crossbows, even though morally, like, I'm, or not even morally, because it's not a moral thing, like, idealistically, I guess, I am not for the use of crossbow. If you're a 100% capable person, because I do believe that there's a you know, an advantage. Now, am I going to stop you from using a crossbow? No, I'm not, because I'm not going to, first off, I got enough crap to fight with anti-hunting and whatever to infight with you about crossbows, right? Like that's one of our, anti-hunters love when we infight. We infight about all this crap. They're like, they just, you know, roll their hands and get excited about the fact that we're screwing up something, and making it easier for them to come in and swoop in and you know, pick up the remains of it. But I'm not going to stop you from doing it, but I'm also not going to look at you with a picture of a crossbow and, you know, a 10-point buck and say, that guy just did what I did. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Like if that's what I need, I'm not going to publicly say that. I'm not going to go on there and go like, you should have shot that with a, because the longbow guy could do the same thing to me. Mm-hmm. I shot it with a compound bow, and to be perfectly honest with you, like I have a crossbow. I bought it so my kids can, you know, start shooting before they can pull, you know, any real weight back, so they'd actually go hunting, because they weren't legally allowed to hunt with their weight bows that they had. It's a different story now. They all can shoot. But and I also had it as an outfitter, because I knew from time to time I got physically impaired people or champ hunters or whatever that had to use that. I have a crossbow. I know I can actually, unless I'm shooting off a rest and bags and, like, you know, prone position, I can shoot further and better with my compound bow than I could offhand with a crossbow anyway. So, like, I don't know. There's that argument too. Like, you know, the arrow travels further and get a better flight in an arrow versus a bolt. Like, there's so many stupid arguments. I'm like, why are we even having these discussions? The discussion should be, is this going to take away hunting from us in some way or shape or form? Okay, if it's not, then let Dan do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
So you don't have to look at Dan and say he's my equal if that's how you feel. Like, yeah. I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope for sure. A while ago, I was having this conversation. I mean, it's been many months now, but I was talking about conservation burnout with a guy. Mm-hmm. And basically the conversation revolved around people getting excited to be part of a conservation organization, and then they do the thing, right? They are active in that organization, they participate in events, they donate their dollar, and then something happens where they're just like, man, I'm done with this conservation thing. Mm-hmm. For maybe it's forever, maybe it's just for right now, whatever the case is. Why do you think that individuals who may have participated in conservation get this conservation burnout?
Well, I think number one is there is a level of, I feel like people actually like expect, I'm gonna give you my personal experience. Okay, so before Howl for Wildlife, and actually sometime before Howl for Wildlife, I was the guy that I was part of Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Mule Deer Foundation, all these different orgs, and I would send my, you know, $600-$700 a year out, and I was like, all right, I did my part in conservation, and the expectation that those orgs were doing certain things like protecting my rights to hunt, you know, some of these things that we talked about today, whatever. The thing is, most of these organizations that are around, they're formulated for something very specific. Like, okay, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, they were organized to put more elk back on the mountain, basically, right? So their work is in habitat acquisition, habitat restoration, you know, relocation of elk. That's what their work is. That's what they do. So you feel like you join this organization and it should be doing A, B, and C, and D. But the fact of the matter is they only do A and B because that's what they were formulated to do. You know, so a lot of people don't understand, like, as a 501c3, you put together a mission, okay? And you have to kind of stay within that mission to maintain your 501c3 status,
yeah.
your nonprofit status. So, like, you might want or expect Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation to lobby to save, you know, whatever, you know, the ability to hunt on Sundays, whatever the case may be. But they're not set up to do that. And they're not even allowed to do that because they're only, you know, you'll hear this conversation all the time too. Like, oh, they can use up to 80%, you know, to pay salaries and yada, yeah. yada. But no, that's not the way it works. You're only allowed to use 20% of what you bring in, to political action. Okay. So the other 80% has to be on education, has to be on habitat work, has to be on operating costs, all the other stuff. It's like, so people get that number wrong a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of why we get burnt out, or not necessarily burnt out, but we get a bad taste in our mouth about different organizations, because we go in there expecting a certain something to happen from that, and we don't get that, and we're like, oh well, these guys, they don't do shit, you know? Yeah. They don't do what we want to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah. All right, now let's chat about Howl. All right, how long has Howl been a thing?
January 2021 is okay. When we officially launched.
Yeah.
We formulated before that, but, you know, we were getting all the ducks in a row and stuff, and then we launched it.
And yeah. Yeah. And so talk a little bit about why Howl for Wildlife was started, and then maybe discuss a little bit if it is at currently where you thought it would be at, you know, when you started it.
Sure. So the reason why we got started was there was a bill in California, and I think you and I talked about this the first time you had me on. There was a bill in California that was trying to eliminate bear hunting completely. And, basically Charles Whitlam, the president of Howl and the co-founder with me, had called me up and he was like, hey, you know, they're trying to ban bear hunting here in California. He lives in California. You know, what can we do? So, you know, I suggested let's use change.org. So, like, you know, we know a lot of people. I've been podcasting for, you know, at the time was, you know, 16 or 17 years, and TV shows, a lot of connections. And I'm like, let's just get this out there. Let's push it out there on change.org. Well, that change.org got like 22,000 signatures, and a bunch of money was sent to change.org. And the sponsoring senator of that bill, he dropped it within 5 days. He pulled the bill, and we're like, wow, this is awesome. And we did it again with another smaller thing in Montana, and we won that too. And I was like, wow, we're like, we need to get a change.org specifically for hunting. And that's where the idea bloomed. It was also coupled with some ideas that Charles already was working on and some things that I was working on. I was working on a thing called Hunter Up, which was really mostly getting hunters to be better to each other, stopping the infighting. Let's focus our efforts, like this extra energy that we're, you know, who gives a crap about what bow you shoot? Like, let's fight the other people that need to be fought, not between each other. So that's how Howl became about. And we provide the tools to hunters to have your voice be heard by the decision makers on any policy that affects wildlife management, conservation issues, and the ability to hunt and fish. Mm-hmm. So it's really powerful. It's like a grassroots thing. Like people who want their voices heard, and you don't have to be from that state, want to, you know, they're coming for Sunday hunting in Iowa, whatever. And you want to protect that. And you want the decision makers to be heard, to hear from you and say, this is something that I love doing.
Yeah.
So the mechanics of it is, if you go to Howlful Wildlife and you go to the action center and you click on one of the actions, and we'll continue with that example that I gave you. You want to save Sunday hunting in Iowa. Not that that's a thing right now, but you know, you go on there and you read through all the talking points, read through all the information on it. It's like, all right, cool, I could get behind this. And you put your name, your email, and sometimes it asks for more information. Sometimes it asks for less, depends on the decision makers we're working with. And it sends a pre-drafted email to all the decision makers on that policy.
Yeah.
And I say pre-drafted. It's not a canned email. It's not a form letter. It doesn't say on behalf of Howlful Wildlife and our 50,000 members, you know, we oppose this bill. It says, hi, I'm Dan. And, you know, fill in the blank talking points, and I'm opposed to this or I'm for this, and it shoots it off and it goes to all the decision makers, and it's randomized. And it's randomized in a way that we upload it with, like, you know, several hundred to several thousand different variations of that email, depending on how much traffic we're going to get. And it's also editable. So, like, if you wanted to erase everything that was there and put in your own words, you could. And what makes it even more powerful is it doesn't make any mention of Howl, doesn't come from Howl. It comes directly from you, the user, to the decision makers. So gotcha. It's a tool.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we do. The other thing we do is we act as a conduit for state issues. Like, okay, we'll use Colorado as an example again. So Coloradoans for Responsible Wildlife Management, they are a organization, boots on the ground, working on the mountain lion and bobcat ban. And we took that state issue and we brought it to the national level, and we brought national awareness to the state issue. So we were driving people, and we still are driving people, to Save the Hunt Colorado. They go to Save the Hunt Colorado, they donate, they get involved on how they want to. And now those, what would have been a state thing and probably would have lost, has now become a national thing, and yeah, all the power behind hunting has got behind it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I'll tell you what, I will say that your ascent to where you guys are at is pretty impressive in the amount of time that you guys have been around. I feel like Howl, I don't know, and maybe it's because when the big conservation organizations that we all know and love, I won't say any names, I just feel like, yeah, they do care. They probably do care. But then, I don't know, man. Can a conservation organization get too big?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we see it all the time. Again, I'm not going to name names. One of the things that we've been able to be so, one of the reasons why we've been able to be so successful is because we're small.
Yeah.
And because the decisions come from a very small board. You know, when you have a board of 300 people, that's right, a lot of people weighing in.
Right.
In some instances, that's great because you get, a really well-rounded decision, mm-hmm, but it's very slow moving. And I mean, sometimes we get bills that are dropped that night on us that need attention and need to be in front of the hunters.
Yeah.
And we only got 4 days. So if you have a board of 400 and you need, you know, to organize all these people to get involved, it's, you know, like, it doesn't move fast.
Yeah.
So yes, you can get too big. And then the other thing is, like, you, and I see this with my own business, or have seen this with my own business, you create this machine that requires a lot of fuel.
Yeah.
Like, so your efforts are highly diluted, because there's always a point of diminishing returns. Like, you can't fundraise enough or do enough to bring in what you need to accomplish the things that you need. And it's like,
yeah.
So yes, yeah. To answer your question.
Yeah. And so guy, give us your thoughts on just conservation in general, because I'll be completely honest, man, I'm busy with life and as much as I feel like in my position doing what I do for a living, conservation should be on the forefront. It is very hard, not only as someone in the industry, and being a content provider, but also being a hunter in the real world. I just don't ever find myself thinking about conservation, right?
I would say you are in the same boat as the majority of the hunting community.
Yeah.
Okay. And to make matters worse is, we'll say there's 16 million hunters, but what portion of those 16 million hunters are like you and I that think about hunting every single day of our lives and want to talk about it and do it? And it's not. So they have even less buy-in than you and I do when it comes to the conservation talk. Mm-hmm. And I see this all the time, because people are like, oh, why are we always losing, to anti-hunting and stuff. So anti-hunters, their thing is protecting animals, or what they consider protecting animals, preservation of animals, and stopping you from being able to hunt.
Yeah.
That's what they're passionate about. You're passionate about hunting. So that's why you can spend 36 hours poring over maps to figure out where you're going to hang your tree stand or whatever the case may be. Your main goal is hunting, and everything else is coming secondary to that. Yeah. So conservation is definitely not on your mind. It's not on the it's not on the forefront. It's probably not even tertiary. It's back there somewhere. Like, it's something that you care about and you want to protect hunting, but it's not something that we wake up in the morning and say, okay, let's go safe hunting today.
Let's go be conservationists today.
Yeah. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know? So from that standpoint, like, obviously, like, I use my example before, like, I used to just send money you send money and you hope that in the hopes that everybody that you're sending money to is going to do, I'm just going to send my money and they're going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So it to some extent that's the reality of it. And it can work that way. Mm-hmm. As long as money is going to all the aspects of hunting, and not, because like I said, all the critter groups are very critter specific, right? Yeah. Some other organizations that are national organizations that are, again, I'm not going to name names, they don't do what you think they do.
Yeah.
So it's just setting up in the beginning, let's support and let's take care of the organizations that are doing the things that I want them to do. Right. If I don't have time to physically go out there and, lend my time to do a water hole, or I can't go to the Capitol, or if I can't get on a Zoom meeting to have my voice heard. I mean, it's kind of why we started Howl the way we did. We tried to make the bar for participation to be super low. Like, we created the easy button.
Yeah.
Like, how hard is it for you to spend? I calculated this out. If you went to the Action Center every week and spent 5 minutes, you would do more for hunting than you ever did for hunting in the past. And there's not even new stuff up there every week. So like that 5 minute might even be an over exaggeration, but you know, for you to get involved in a into a bill or into an action that would either promote or defend mm-hmm. hunting or fishing, because we do some fishing stuff as well. Like, it takes 2 minutes to do it.
Yeah,
it's not a whole lot. It's not a whole lot of time. So, like, for me, if you're asking me, like, what guys and girls should do, like, I would say, this is what I can afford a year.
Yeah.
Okay, let me figure out what can I afford a year. Is it $100? Is it $500? Is it $1,000? Whatever. Let me divvy that up between the things that are important to me. Okay? And I'm going to support these whatever groups. Hopefully one of those is Howlful Wildlife. But let me support these groups. And then the other flip side of it is how much time can I dedicate? Can I dedicate 5 minutes a week?
Yeah.
Because if I can dedicate 5 minutes a week, trust me, you're gonna do a lot for the protection of hunting. Like, now, 5 minutes a week, is that going to do anything for, building habitat? No, because that's not what we do. But
yeah, I like you guys is because of the comment that I made earlier. And that is, I just don't find myself thinking about conservation and or certain rules and regulations and why it matters. And so when I open my email up, and I get an email reminding me or a notification or an action alert or something like that saying, hey, listen, man, your brothers in Colorado are facing something. You know, how would you feel if deer hunting got taken away today? Well, I'd feel pretty pissed about it. Let me go handle this real quick. Click, click, done. Right. And so, as much as I hate seeing hunting going towards, like, just hunting in general has become easier. So mm-hmm. has being able to be involved in conservation. And so now I look at Howl and I say, hey, dude, there's no excuse anymore. There's no excuse. Like, you can do things with a click of a button and take, just solve, like, help solve an issue right now. Just do it. Click, click, done. And so it's there. People just need to open an email is basically all they need to do.
Yep, absolutely. That's why we created. So, you know, we have paid memberships and we have different varying things like Go Hunt and, partnerships with Pope and Young and American Bear Foundation, stuff like that. We have paid memberships and we would love you to be involved with those paid memberships.
Yeah.
But we also created a free membership. We're the only organization that created a free membership because, one, it gives you the opportunity to test the water, dip your toe in there and see if it's something for you. But we also didn't want to tell you, hey, you can't get involved because you can't afford to give me $30 a year.
Yeah.
Like, that's silly. It's foolish. Like,
yeah,
we're doing this to save hunting. We're not doing this. Charles, myself, actually the whole board, we don't pay ourselves. We haven't been paid. Like, I spend probably somewhere between 30 to 40 hours a week on top of my job, on top of running a podcast, on top of my family, on top of, you know, hunting and everything else that I do, guiding.
Like, yeah.
I don't sleep anymore, you know?
Yeah.
I'm doing these things because I want to protect and save hunting. I'm not doing it because it's a paycheck.
Right.
And neither is Charles. Like, I mean, Charles actually is one of the, he's the one that funded the initial startup of the whole company. He still has not paid himself back.
Yeah.
And it's not because we don't have money coming in. We have money coming in. We have 50 something thousand members already. Like, we have money coming in, not to the extent that I would love to have, because I would love to have more money so that we could actually hire people and to do more things that we want to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that money needs to go to other things, and we realize that.
Yeah.
And eventually we'll get to that point. Like, hey, eventually, we'll be able to maybe make a salary, and I won't have to build swimming pools anymore for a living. So, yeah. But, and I can concentrate all my efforts on this. But
right. Right. Yeah. And so, kind of winding down now, what if someone hears this and they're interested in how, where they can find more information, where should we send them?
howforwildlife.org, and that's H-O-W-L-F-O-R forwildlife.org is the website. Okay. We do a lot of stuff through social media. So Howl, H-O-W-L underscore org on Instagram is, I would say, the majority of where like our action alerts and stuff go through. Mm-hmm. But if you go to the Howl for Wildlife and you're not ready, you're not 100% sure, go to join the pack, and there's a free membership within there.
Yeah.
Just go put your name and your email address. Then you'll get those email alerts, like you said.
Yep.
And I want people to understand, don't just get involved in the things that, because this is one of the things you asked me about, did I envision where we are now? One of the things that that irks the heck out of me is that we can't get on the same page, like, with wanting to help out the guy in the other state.
Yeah.
You know, we don't see the connection. If it doesn't seemingly affect me, like, every time we have an action, and if it's in a new state or if it's in a state that we see a lot of people from that state get involved, and then
a few
people that are, you know, get it are getting involved. And without taking up too much more of your time, like, I want to point something out. Howl for Wildlife has been able to move mountains. Like, we've been able to move mountains with thousands of people.
Yeah.
Okay. When we put a action up, a few thousand people get involved in that action.
Okay.
We are 16 million people in the United States, 16 million hunters. Could you imagine if 10%, 20%, 30%, 50%, hell, all 16 million people got, we would never lose a single thing about hunting or fishing ever.
Ever. Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
There is no politician out there that would ignore your voices. Okay. We have won something like 92% of every action that we've gotten involved in. And I'm telling you, we did that with thousands,
a
couple thousand people.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So,
and that just shows you the power that we have if we work together. Period. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty simple to me.
And it doesn't take anything. It's really no real, you know, effort. I this year, because it's an election year, and there's the last 2 years, previous years were very busy. There was actions coming out left and right. There was bills and presented left and right. This year is not as busy. Like, this year, I honestly think if you spent 5 minutes a month, you would
figure it out.
Yeah. So it's not that hard.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, John, man, I know we kind of jumped all over the place here in this podcast, but I think it was a great discussion, and it's definitely a reminder this type of season where we're coming out of turkey season, and there's not too much going on as far as big game or hunting is concerned. But now's the time to, if you got a second, just go take a look at something. Take a look at Howl. Or a local conservation effort, and get involved as much or as little as you possibly can. And like I said, I've said it before, you've said it, just a little bit can actually move the needle.
Yep, absolutely.
So, sir, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and chat with us. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, appreciate you. Thank you.